Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Is hair a material?
Are biscuits a material?
Are crystals a material?
Is plastic a material?
Is porridge a material?
Can gases be a material?
Are eggs a material?
Is water a material?
What do you call everything that isn't a material?
Sorry, I didn't mean to laugh at your question.
And yet you continue to do so.
Hello, and welcome back to Handmade, the making podcast with real talk about materials. I'm your host, material scientist Anna Podolsky, and this episode I'm talking to Sophie Cotterill, who is a weaver and the founder of Wallflower Weavings. I started by asking Sophie the story of how she learned to weave.
So, I actually started, I think I was 19, and I'd actually moved abroad for 1 year. I moved to Holland. So I was living in this little rooftop apartment, sort of on my own every day, really needed something to occupy my time. I moved over with my partner at the time, and being the Instagram addict that I am, I actually came across weaving on there. And at the time, there were just a handful of people seeming to do, sort of take on this new modern take on tapestries. I just found it really exciting, so I went out with the minimal funds I had at the time and made a loom out of a picture frame and nails. I bought some really cheap, nasty, old secondhand wool.
Yeah.
I just gave it a go, and I was just hooked straight away. And within 6 months, I had started practicing the methods that I now use every day in my work, so spinning and dyeing the wool and washing the wool and obviously weaving still. So that's six years ago now. So nice. That's when I opened my shop. And it's just grown every year, which has been great.
That's awesome. So you've been doing it for 6 years. It'd be cool to hear, I guess, like, yeah, what your materials and processes are. Like, what do you make and how do you make it?
So obviously, by starting with weaving, I had to really understand the fibres that I was working with. It's very easy to just assume you can go to your local wool shop and just buy out nice colours and things. But the difference is that a lot of the most available yarns are acrylic, nylon, synthetic fibres that I really don't take to. They're fine, they're brilliant as well, because some people do have allergies to wool, some people are vegan, but there's a huge range of fibres out there now. You've got plant fibres, you've got animal fibres, so there's a lot to work with. So while I was weaving, I started to learn more about those fibres and how they could be used. Then I started spinning, and just me being me, really wanted to go back to the source. So quite literally, if I could get to the farm and watch the sheep be shorn, that's what I would do. So I like it all to be very traceable, and obviously being an animal lover as well, I want to know that, you know, it's all legit, it's all okay. So I have started working with different smallholders across the UK. Who I know really look after their animals, and this could be alpacas, it could be goats, it could be sheep. So that's a huge thing, obviously. And then the physical equipment that I work with, it's all wooden, which is really nice because it's very traditional and it goes right back to obviously when these methods were first created, and this is going back hundreds, thousands of years.
Yeah,
it's nice to be a little part of that history now. This is just a new phase of popularity in the craft, and it's really built up over the past few years. I mean, from when I started in 2015, 2014 to now, there's a huge world of modern weavers out there, and it's really nice to see. And again, working with all of this natural equipment that doesn't really require any electricity, anything like that. It's all sustainable practices, so that's really nice.
Yeah. Why is it important to you to go all the way back to the source of your materials? You mentioned, you know, working with smallholders and actually, I don't know if you actually meet the sheep, but as good as.
If I can, I do. And if they've got a name, that's even better. I think it links in with my own personality, really. I don't eat meat, anything like that. I'm very into eco-friendly processes at home, at work, anywhere that I can possibly improve on those aspects, I do. And as with everything, even in the craft world, there is a lot of waste. There are a lot of chemical processes. And naturally, people want to be working with the softest wools and the cleanest and the whitest and, you know, everything to be really nice and pure. But I've kind of found a hidden beauty in working with the very natural fibres. I don't mind getting elbow deep in a big bucket full of soapy, sheepy, smelly water.
Yeah.
You know that at the end, when I pull it out and dry it, it's going to be beautifully clean, fresh and natural wool. And, you know, I lay it out on the grass outside. I'll do the natural dyeing process outside as well. So summer really is the key time for all of that, because, you know, you get the sunshine, you can really make the most of the materials that way. So I build up through the summer, get all of that work done to give me, you know, a winter's worth of materials to work with too.
Cool. So do you dye with natural materials as well, or do you use acid dyes? Or
yeah, so I do occasionally use acid dyes. I know that seems quite contradictory, however, because when the material is in the water soaking up the dye, you should be left with the completely clear water by the end. The material will soak up all of that acid dye and it won't then go into the environment. So that's something I'm quite careful with, and I try not to use it as much. But yes, for natural dye, so this could be vegetables, it could be tree bark, it could be tea, coffee, rust, bit of everything. But a lot of it is actually available, you know, either from your local supermarket. You can get beetroot, onion skins, rhubarb root as well. It's amazing what you can use. Thankfully, we do have a family allotment, so
great.
I do find a lot of materials there to work with. Especially the rhubarb root was amazing. You would never think to look at it, but it's this great big gnarled root. It's almost like a mandrake. And you chop into it and it's bright yellow, it's golden.
Really?
And the colour was incredible that came from that. And likewise, you know, onion skins, quite unassuming. Again, a really golden colour. And then you have, you know, you can source indigo online, which is an incredible process, because as it oxidizes, you know, it will start in the water as a sort of clear, greeny colour. You'll lift it out and you can physically, right in front of you, see it turn to the deepest blue.
That's amazing.
Just incredible. So it's a lot of fun to experiment with, and anybody can do it. Again, in a lot of low impact ways, because it can all be done in some solar dyeing, leaving things out for a week in a jar in the sun, and you take it out and you've got either the color you wanted or something completely unexpected. It depends on how you've done it and what it's been exposed to. That's a lot.
It all sounds very experimental. How did you learn all of this stuff? Did you just pick it up as you went along?
Yeah, pretty much I was quite happy to just experiment and see what happened. Mm. Again, because of when I started in Holland and I didn't have many facility to work with, I didn't have much money, I had to get quite creative. I had a lot of time on my hands, so I was just messing about every day, just trying different things.
Cool.
So I was actually quite excited to come back to the UK because I felt that I would be able to really dive deeper into it and have be able to go and actually meet the smallholders, be able to revisit the family allotment to get the natural dye plants, and actually start investing in some equipment as well that I could not fit into that little rooftop apartment. So yeah, it was nice to come home and really get into that.
So you mentioned feeling part of the sort of history and tradition of weaving. I'd like to talk to you about weaving itself, actually, but just going down this historical tangent quickly. Have you looked much into, the history of it? Sort of where, I know that you mentioned that you were in Holland. When I wrote my book, and there's a wool chapter in there, I remember reading about the kind of Dutch weavers. It was a real industry over there. I guess before the Industrial Revolution when everything became mechanised. Do you know much about the history of it?
I don't know a great deal. I know that's going to sound awful. I mean, at any opportunity I get, I will, because obviously I like to visit mills across the UK, and I do like to speak with people about the history there. I think the main thing is just feeling quite proud to be, like I say, a little cog in that system, that you're keeping it going, you're reviving it, because I think the last revival of tapestries and weaving was in the 70s. You had a lot of macrame, that was the sort of the craft resurgence. Then it died down a little bit again, but obviously, as you know, now there are knitters, crochets, everybody is doing something to do with wool in a way. So it's just nice to keep that going and sort of enlighten people to another craft that they probably hadn't thought of before.
Definitely. So tell us about weaving then. What's the process? What's your thought process when you sit down to make a piece?
It's quite interesting because I've made a lot of friends who weave as well, and we all have completely different approaches. So your base equipment is a loom. Now, traditional looms would have been great big structures. So you've got all the pedals, you've got all the bits and bobs, very, very complicated. And that's something that I would really love to learn to use one day. But they're quite hard to find, quite hard to be taught how to use them as well. But at home, you can work with a frame. So as I say, when I first started, it was just an A4 picture frame. I knocked nails in at the top and bottom parallel, and then that's sort of very basic setup. I've obviously now got some better equipment. And again, it's basically you've got your warp and your weft. And the thing I love about that is that it really is woven into society. It's everywhere you look. Once you recognize that pattern, it's everywhere. So up and down, that's your warp.
Okay.
The weft is the design, and that goes across.
Ah, okay.
And there are so many different techniques that you can use, but you're basically creating this. It is a fabric, really. And I'm trying to think of the best way to explain it, really. When I go about it, I don't really have a plan. I just sort of go for it. So I wouldn't say mastered. I think there's always more to learn, but I've certainly narrowed down my favourite techniques and ways to keep that structure very strong. So I start from the bottom and work up. So the fringing in the tapestry, that's what I start with first. However, I do know that other people will actually work upside down.
Okay.
We'll start from the very top of the design, work down the loom, and finish with the fringe. That just baffles me. I cannot do that.
So the fringe is always at the bottom, is that right?
I mean, there are no limitations really with what you can create when moving, but that standard design that I usually create, you'll have some beautiful fringing at the bottom, and then you'll have a woven body. Mm-hmm. And then you'll finish it off with a dowel or a branch at the top, mm-hmm. and hang it on the wall.
Got you.
So it's, again, going back to rug making, it's all sort of developed into a way that you can bring it into a modern home.
So how does your, because your technique sound, you know, very traditional, like they haven't really changed, what is a contemporary spin on this?
I think I would probably say it is the influence of Instagram.
Okay.
I think it's that people have found a way to integrate a lot of modern trends into something that they can put onto their walls. You'd still want it in your homes. People could look back at a piece that's 100 years old, they could respect it, but maybe wouldn't want it in their home. I would.
Yeah.
But I think people have found ways to prettify these things and turn them into, you know, additions to the home that are easy to integrate into your gallery walls and things like that. A lot of modern colours being introduced. You know, I work in quite a natural and organic, whimsical style. Mm. A lot of influence from nature and flowers, mm-hmm. hence the name wallflower weaving. But I also know a lot of people that work in quite modern styles, very minimal. And I really, really like that style just as much. I think the main thing is everybody, no matter who you are, even if you did try to mimic the style of somebody else, your two hands can only produce the style that you are sort of destined to make. You can't recreate anybody else's work. It's very unique to each person. And it's, again, about the understanding of the materials you're working with too, because that makes a huge difference.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Yeah. So you hinted earlier that when you're creating the piece, you have to consider the kind of mechanical properties of it, almost like the strength. I think you said strength, you know, when you're creating these pieces. How much, what are the factors, I suppose, in that? And what are you thinking about when you're trying to make something that is going to be strong?
So the basic method of, so the sort of basic technique is called tabby weave, and that is that your weft, so your sideways design, that goes under, over, under, over, under, over your warp strings. Your warp will usually be one material, maybe a thin cotton thread. Your weft can be anything. I mean, you can mix it up, but that is how I start the base of it being a strong structure. And then as it turns back on itself, it will go the opposite way. And that, you know, if you carried on like that, you would end up with a block of fabric, mm-hmm. basically. You can change this up by using different techniques. You can create a braiding effect, you can create looping effects, fringing as well. It's just about knowing where to place these techniques to ensure that the piece is not going to fall apart when you take it off.
Yeah.
And finishing the top and bottom with a very strong stitch that stops the fibres from moving when you remove it from the loom itself.
Right.
Then it relaxes and you have to, you know, keep that structure in place. I do set it with water often.
Yeah.
Don't soak it, but maybe spray it.
Mm.
You can also put lavender oil in there because that's a natural moss deterrent.
So oh, cool.
That's quite a nice way to finish the piece off. And again, that just binds all of those fibres into place.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so interesting. What do you get out of doing this?
Oh, so much. when I first started, it was a bit of an escape, really, because I was in a new place and I felt I didn't have much purpose. I took an opportunity to move abroad, but you know, I was on my own a lot of the time. So firstly, it was a newfound source of creativity. And then I also met a lot of people online that were doing similar things, and I'm still friends with those people today.
Oh, nice.
So that's been really rewarding. And they're all over, you know, in Australia, Canada.
Yeah, yeah.
All over the place. So that's been amazing. And I think a lot of people, I mean, I have previously done an interview about the mental health benefits of weaving. I think it applies to all crafts, but there is something quite unique about weaving because you really slow down and you really get into the process. You kind of end up in a bit of a daydream. And you've just got the sound of the wooden equipment, you've got the sensations and the tactile nature of all the materials you're working with. So I think in that sense, it's definitely a bit of an escape.
Mm.
It's a way to just slow down and push everything else out of your mind. So if I'm having a bad day, weaving is what I want to be doing by the end of it, to sort of level myself out completely. And I know a lot of people do find some nice respite in that process as well.
Yeah, for sure. What future directions do you want to go in with this? You know, what are your aims or your hopes and dreams with it?
I had a taste of doing this full time through lockdown.
Okay.
And it was amazing. It was fantastic. I would love to end up doing workshops. So it's not been possible this past year, but I would love to actually meet people locally and do classes and teach people. I did release a tutorial last summer for people to start trying out, and people really enjoyed that. And I think to actually see people in person and, you know, have a group of people around a table, be able to speak to them this way and share any knowledge that I've obtained so far would be really rewarding. And generally, any way to continue learning about the process and adding new factors into it, because spinning has become just as much of an important practice for me as weaving has. So again, that's something that I would like to explore more.
So that actually really leads me nicely on to my next question, which is if listeners have felt inspired by hearing your story, particularly the fact that, you know, you were able just to start with very, very basic equipment, where would you recommend, or what would you recommend they do to kind of have a go themselves?
So because the popularity of weaving and spinning has increased so much in recent years, there are a lot of sources online. You can find a lot of kits.
Mm-hmm.
You can find books. YouTube naturally is full of tutorials, and people come up with the most fantastic ways to build your own equipment on a budget. Looms themselves are not super expensive. Obviously, I'm sure as they get bigger, as they get more complex, they can do. But to start off with, you know, if you're a new weaver and you want to just sit on the couch and have a go at something, Netflix in the background, it's a really good way to do it, because you know, they're called lap looms, and you can just sit there with it on your lap.
Cool.
Or you would need, you can use a fork from your kitchen and a needle. And that's all you would need to get started, really. So it can be done very cheaply, and there are a lot of, as I say, a lot of sources online to help in learning the technique.
Yeah, that's awesome. Is there anything else you want to chat about before we wrap up?
Ooh,
anything you want to mention, or sort of your own work that you want to plug? Oh, actually, it'd be really interesting to hear, have you got a favourite piece of work that you've done, or one that you're particularly proud of? Just everything came together like you'd hoped.
Do you know, that actually makes me, I wish that I'd made a count of all the pieces I've actually ever made.
Yeah.
I think I'd probably surprise myself if I could actually see that number.
Yeah.
I think the pieces that have challenged me in that, so once I had to make a piece to hang in somebody's stairwell, they have very high ceilings. So this, you know, from the top of the stairs looking forward, it would be that full space there.
Yeah.
And it was a landscape, it had to be.
Oh, wow.
It was sort of hills and the sun and a rainbow.
Wow.
I didn't have a loom big enough. So I had to rig one up. So I hijacked a dining table, and I had to get some really strong brackets. I had to make a loom across the table.
Amazing.
Just to be able to make this piece. and I was, I think I just stood there and stared at it thinking, how have I said yes to this? How can I have faith that I'm actually going to pull this off?
Nice.
But it came out beautifully.
Yeah.
I was really, really happy with it. And, it, you know, it was really well received online. The client, most importantly, they loved it.
Yeah.
So that was definitely, that stands out to me. A piece I'm very proud of. But I've also created pieces, even small ones, quick ones, but as gifts for people, or sort of in memory of certain occasions or times. You know, even if, say, I was going through a hard time with something and I made a piece just to relax myself, as I said before, if it was a bit of an escape, then those pieces are equally as important, because it's almost like a little piece of nostalgia, maybe. So that's always been a nice process as well. So every single piece has been unique, and I've enjoyed, you know, I've put my all into every single one. But yeah, definitely anything that challenges me a bit more is always nice.
An opportunity to learn new stuff. Was that, sorry?
I'll take on any challenge. If people come to me with a brief that just sounds a bit bonkers, I'm really excited, because I just think, right, how can I do this? Let's do this. So
that's great. It's always nice to have an opportunity to learn new stuff. I remember that. So I got into knitting over the last couple of years, and I, you know, when you look at a pattern and there's like four stitches that you've got no idea how to do them, or but the end product you can see is going to be really great.
That's it.
I love
that
challenge.
That's an interesting thing, because sometimes people do come to me and say, do you have a pattern for that weaving that you made? Can I buy it?
Yeah,
the pattern. Make it, but it's not the same as knitting, which I feel. So I have dabbled in knitting, but it's very obviously methodic. It's you know, you've got the stitches, but you've got to count. You've got to know exactly where you're going with it.
Yeah,
at the end piece. Whereas I do find that weaving is very free form. So you are unable to provide a pattern, because, as I say, people will produce a completely different piece of artwork even if they did work with some kind of design or pattern or directions. So it's quite a nice one to just, anybody can try it and just dive in and give it a go, and you'll always come out with something that's really nice that you can hang on your wall.
How long does it take, actually, to, because knitting's obviously quite a slow process, is weaving faster?
I would say it's probably equal.
Okay.
It's very time consuming. There are a few ways that you can sort of help speed yourself up, but overall, I think it's part of taking on that slow process and being quite careful with what you're doing that makes it so rewarding.
Yep.
But I would say on average, minimum 4 hours on a piece.
Okay.
That would be a smaller one.
Mm.
There's different levels of intricacy involved. You know, some people like quite a chunky minimal piece, which would be quite fast. Again, but you would still be looking at about 3 hours. But if you went for something that was much more intricate, using finer balls and threads, then you're looking at quite an intensive process.
Mm.
So either way, it's still fun.
Yeah, for sure. Well, if listeners have enjoyed hearing from you and want to check out your stuff, where can they find you online?
So the best way would be Instagram, which is smallflower_weaving. That is where I share all my posts, my latest projects, and you get a really good insight into the background of it all. So through my stories, which is where I post most regularly, so you'll see anything from the latest yarn on the wheel, the latest weavings, whatever I'm up to in the yard, if I'm dyeing anything, washing any new fleece, and also the shenanigans that my cats get up to when they're getting stuck into it all as well.
Excellent.
So, yeah, there's a lot to see on there. It's quite interesting.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for chatting to me on the podcast. It's been really fascinating to hear your processes and your approaches, and I can't wait to see what you do next.
Yeah, it's been great to join in. Thanks for having me.
So that was the wonderful Sophie Cotterill on all things weaving. Thanks so much to her for coming on the podcast. A reminder that my book, Handmade, A Scientist's Search for Meaning Through Making, is out now. It's available to order as a hardback, and you can also find it in all good bookshops. If Kindle copies are more your thing, you can get hold of those online, and the audiobook version is out online too. If you want to hear more about the book, you can go back to listen to the episode a few ago called Handmade, where you can hear me interviewed by the wonderful Hannah Ayoub, who provided illustrations for the book as well. Let me know if you've read the book and what you think of it, or you can just say hi to me on social media. I'm at Anna Pajewski. That's everything for this episode of the podcast. As always, it would be awesome if you could like, subscribe, rate and review the podcast. You can say hello to us on social media as well. We're on Twitter at Real Talk, that's R-I-A-L Talk, and on Instagram at Handmade Pod. If you feel like supporting the podcast with a one-time financial donation, you can do so at supporter.acast.com/handmade. A huge thanks to everyone who's already done so. It really does help to keep the podcast going. And a massive thanks, as always, to Alex Lathbridge for the music. Mix. Next week, I'll be talking to Richard Wheater, who is a neon artist and founder of neon sign company Neon Workshops. So until then, take care, and I'll speak to you next time on Handmade.
Small details are big surfaces, tight corners are odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns, so you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.